I know that I said that we'd begin Tumas Kohanim today, but I realized that before we do that, there are a few aspects of halachos of Kavura that we did not yet discuss. These are the dinim that appear in Siman Shin Samach Beis. The din that the Gemara has is that ki kavar tikberenu bayom hahu, that there's a chiyuv to bury, is a chiyuv to bury the mace. That din of kavura, I believe we noted this earlier, that din of kavura requires kavura bekarka, meaning if a person just takes the mace, puts the mace in a coffin, and doesn't put that in the ground, you violate the iser of halonas hamace, right? That this is if Aleph and Siman Shin Samach Beis, if you just put the mace in the coffin, you don't put it in the ground, that's the iser of halonas hamace. It is proper to put the coffin in the ground, even in Chutz La'aretz. Meaning to say that we take the coffin and we put the coffin in the ground in the sense of that we try to make sure that the body is resting directly on the ground. This halacha is true both in Eretz Yisrael, where there is a pasuk v'chipar admaso amo, and even in Chutz La'aretz, because the idea is ki afar ata vel afar tashuv, that you are dirt and you return to dirt. So therefore there is a mitzvah of kavura bikarka. The practice, as we noted in certain Hasidic communities, it's quoted in the Ramban that you remove the bottom of the coffin. The Shach in Ais Aleph writes that a hole suffices. But according to the Shach, even a hole on the side of the coffin is sufficient. That's the first din. The din of ki kavar tik birenu bayom hahu means the lashon of Rabbim that you have to bury him again and again. I once had a case like this. You could bury a nifter, and then the warder comes and sweeps him out. You have to bury him again. Ki kavar tik birenu, you bury the nifter many times. The requirement of kavura is one of the reasons why we are so traditionally opposed to cremation in halacha. Cremation is a practice that developed mostly in the 1860s, 1870s in Germany. It obviously existed beforehand. I should note that cremation, the way it's done today, is very different than just a funeral pyre. A funeral pyre is that you burn the body. What cremation is that they burn the body to an extent and they pulverize the bone, etc. It's a totally different thing. There's nothing that remains. Cremation is a violation of the din of kikavar tikberenu. The mitzvah is to bury the nifter. If you don't bury the nifter, you're in violation of the mitzvah saseh of kavura. In the tshuva of the Beis Yitzchak, he writes that if you cremate, you also violate the Iser of Los Sollin. That's somewhat questionable, whether you violate the Iser of Los Sollin. The Bible according to the Badei HaShulchan says he's not convinced that there is an Iser of Los Sollin when you cremate. But nonetheless, there is a din that we don't cremate because that is a bittul of the mitzvah essay of Kavura. In many svarim, it says that cremation is fundamentally worse than just being mevatel the mitzvah of kavura. Cremation shows that you don't believe in tchiyas hameisim. When we learn the sugya of burying a mace with the talis, the idea over there is that it shows that we believe that tchiyas hameisim is going to be a physical reality, and because tchiyas hameisim is going to be a physical reality, therefore we put the body in a way that the body will get up and the body will be wearing the talis as beforehand. There are traditions from Yaakov Emden based on Gemaras in Shabbos and elsewhere. There's a certain Tchiyas HaMeisim that happens because there's a bone called the luz. That bone is sustained when you eat Malava Malka, no? And Tchiyas HaMeisim happens from that bone. When you cremate, that bone does not remain. And therefore, by cremating, you are showing that you do not believe in Hasharas HaNefesh, that you do not believe in of physical Tchiyas HaMesim, which is why there was such strong opposition to cremation. There was a professor in the Jewish Theological Seminary, Michael Higger. Michael Higger tried to argue that if you read the psukim, it says, for example, by Shaul, that when Shaul died, that they burned him. Shaul was killed. Hargiboa, the psukim say that they burned him. There's a number of psukim that sound like they burned him. However, that doesn't really, according to our tradition of interpretation, the Radak writes in all those cases, they didn't actually burn him. Rather, they burned his kalim. Right, we spoke about this. This appears in the Shulchan Aruch earlier. That's not considered Darkei HaEmori to burn the kalim of a mace. So therefore, therefore, because you burn the kalim, so that's why the pshat and the psukim. If anything, the psukim and amos sound like that burning a body is the greatest degradation possible. The masreifos, avol secha, if your body is going to be burned, that's like a terrible thing. So our opposition to cremation is not only a bittul of the mitzvah, it's not only that the person who's cremated is denying that he or she will come up in Tchiyas HaMesim, but cremation is also forbidden because it's considered to be a degradation of the body. Traditionally, there was a discussion in Germany among those Achrayim at the time when cremation began that maybe you should not even bury the cremation ashes, which are called the cremains, in a Jewish cemetery. There's a tshuva in the Melamed L'Hoel. There are tshuvas in the Matzah Levi. The Matzah Levi was the Grossgemeinde Rav in Frankfurt am Main. He was the rabbi of the general community, not the rabbi of the Altstrichgemeinde. There are tshuvas who discuss, what's his name, Professor Adam Furziger has lengthy discussions about burial of cremation ashes. And the practice in certain German communities, the lenient ones would allow the burial of cremation ashes outside the cemetery. The strict ones would not allow the burial of cremation ashes at all. That seems to be the standard practice. However, as time went on, the issue got more complicated. Just to tell a personal story, I had an aunt, and my aunt was named Branka. Branka Weintraub, that's her name. She gave a lot of money to Yeshiva when she died. So Branka's third husband was a man named Jacob Weintraub. Okay, you have to keep track of all this. Jacob's first wife was a woman named Barbara. Jacob and Barbara were both survivors of the Warsaw Ghetto. Jacob was actually a secretary of Emanuel Ringelbaum, who ran this thing called the Einig Shabbos Society in the Warsaw Ghetto. They tried to document everything that was going on in the ghetto. Jacob and Barbara, because they came from Warsaw, the survivors of the ghetto, they felt that they should have been burned by Hitler the way all of their friends and relatives were burned by Hitler, Yimach Shimon. So Barbara died before Jacob, hence Jacob married my aunt after, and Barbara was cremated. No one knew about this. But Jacob wrote an autobiography. When you're a super wealthy man, you do this. You self-publish an autobiography. And in his autobiography, it says that he took Barbara, he took his first wife, and he put in her favorite sculpture. They were art dealers, and it's like a sculpture of a hand, a fist. And okay, so that sculpture's in my parents' house. You lift it up. It says on the bottom, Barbara. That means she's inside this sculpture. Yes, it's kind of gross. That's where Barbara was. We'll have to have a conversation maybe later today about whether there's tumah to the Efer HaNisrafim. Right? That conversation have to come up. Can a Kohen go in the house? Is there a din of Kavura? Jacob himself died on Pesach. My father is the executor of the state. He's supposed to. Jacob gave verbal instructions that although his will said to cremate him, he had discussed with my father not being cremated, but he died on the first day, I believe, of a 3-day yontiv, and he was cremated before my father could get there. So Jacob and Barbara are both cremated. But the reason that they were cremated is not because they did not want to be part of the Jewish people. The traditional opposition to burial of cremains was because if you're cremated, that shows you don't want to be part of the Jews. But in their case of being cremated, dafka, because of a deep Jewish sense that they felt that they wanted to be like all their friends who were burned by Hitler, Yimach Shemo. So therefore, Rav Shechter paskin that they could bury all the the cremation ashes. My father had the Chefer Kadisha. Next to my aunt Branka's tombstone, there are two tombstones, one for Jacob and one for Barbara. The ashes are not there. They put them at the side of the cemetery rather than in the middle of the cemetery. My father dug a hole and put the ashes there. They took Barbara out of the sculpture and they put Barbara there. There's a whole literature about this. Often today, Jews from the former Soviet Union come to Israel and they come carrying the urn of ashes. Apparently, for some reason, it's like popular in the Soviet Union to cremate. So what do you do now? They're bringing their relative to Eretz Yisrael, Dafka, in order because they feel this connection. So the Rabbanut originally felt that you don't bury cremation ashes. At one point, there was a big Levaya. Again, this is all in Adam Furziger's articles. At one point, there was a big Levaya. They brought over some ashes from the crematoria, and the chief rabbis were there. And first they said, okay, ashes from the crematoria will bury. And then later on, originally they said they're burying on the side of the cemetery. Later on, the process moved. Today, I think the feeling of many rabbanot is that they will bury cremains, some within the cemetery itself, some at the side of the cemetery. That's the practice that's developed, again, because today it does not really reflect a lack of identification with the Jewish people. So that's the basic story of burial of cremains. Mr. Pellin Schwartz, it looks like you raised your hand.
Yeah, I guess, how do you reconcile the fact that on the one hand, there's this idea of not getting cremated because it shows some sort of kfira and triyat ametim, and on the other hand, we have this positive idea of like mishin takla basar or whatever, that we only get some sort of reward or some sort of, you know, kapara once the remains are all gone. Like, we don't believe that our body stays whole, you know, like we actually think there's a positive aspect of our body disintegrating. So
I think the idea over here is what Rabbi Chomiko Tukachinsky writes in the Geshe Achayim, which is that if the body disintegrates, it creates new life. The organa, it becomes like fertilizer. It's creating new life. So therefore, that's a positive thing. If anything, we want that process to happen. We don't want to delay the process because there's a certain kapara that happens when you become part of the ground. Cremation ashes no longer have any organic element. They do not create any growth. So that's why the poskim are so strongly against cremation besides everything else. It says in Shulchan Aruch, you're allowed to like pour sid on the mace to make the body disintegrate more quickly. But again, that means that the body is intact and disintegrating. If the body is not really intact, so then that's the story over there. Again, so this is the issue of cremation. I once spoke with Professor William Jordan in Princeton, who's a medievalist, and he just knows everything. So I asked Professor Jordan, you know, if the opposition to cremation is because of our belief that Tchias HaMeisim will be a physical process. So at the height of the Maimonidean controversy, when there were people who felt that Tchias HaMeisim will not be physical, were there any Jews who actually cremated? So Professor Jordan said, I don't know. And he also said, I should choose a less lugubrious topic to focus on. Those are his words. Adkan Devarav HaKadoshim. So that's the issue of Kavura, and that's the issue of the bittul of Kavura in the sense of, what's it called? Not cremating. Our belief is that Tchias HaMeisim is going to happen, and we bury the Nifter in a way to show that there's going to be Tchias HaMeisim. So we bury you like you are lying down in bed. Head up, right? Head up, right? Like you're lying on your back. That's the way you go to sleep. It's temporary. It's sleeping. Pirkei Tshuva over here has a discussion that we bury you with your feet towards the entrance to the Beis HaKvareis. The way you came in is the way you're going to go out. We believe you're going to go out. Chassam Sofer here in the Pirkei Tshuva discusses, do we put the feet direction north to south or east to west? So he says that there are two ways to get to Eretz Yisrael. You can first move east and then move south, first move east, then move south, or you can first move south and then you move east. There's like two ports to Eretz Yisrael, and those are the two menhagim. If in the cemetery they're originally burying one way, and then for whatever the reason, the cemetery is filled up and they can bury the mason only the other way. So he says you should open a new entrance in the cemetery in the direction where they are facing. That seems to be the practice. Again, it's in the Pirkei Tshuva Se'if Katan Beis. In the Pirkei Tshuva Se'if Katan Aleph, he discusses burying a Eiver Min HaChai. If someone is an amputee, so they cut off a limb, so does that limb require kavura? So the Noda Yehuda famously says that there is no inyan, there's no mitzvah of kavura per se on an Eiver Min HaChai. Rather, the reason why we bury it is just so that they should not, the Kohanim should not become tummy to it. As such, in our common practice, if someone is an amputee, so the hospital will burn the limb in most cases because there's infection, they're worried about spreading. So therefore, according to Nadi Yehuda, there is no problem with that. The Shuv of Igris Maisha in Chelek Gimel Simin Kufmem Aleph, if Moshe Feinstein tries to show that there is a mitzvah of Kuvura and Eiver Min HaChai, if Moshe's argument is that the fact that the Gemara has a special pasuk that a Kohen is metame to a Guf Shalem, not an Eiver Min HaChai, why do you need such a pasuk? The din is that Tumas Kehanim, this past week's parasha, is only in order to enable Kuvura. If Eiver Min HaChai does not need kavura, why do you need a special pasuk to say that Kohanim are metame to the Eiver? Or are not metame to the Eiver. Why do you need a pasuk to say that Kohanim are not metame to the Eiver if Tumas Kohanim is only Lotzar kavura? Rather, Moshe argues that there is an inyan of kavura on an Eiver Min HaChai. To be an Eiver, you need Basar Gidim and Atzamos. It has to have bones. If someone, let's say, has an appendix that's taken out or the like, there's no inyan of kavura in that case. It's not considered to be a full-fledged, Eiver. The dinim of kavura is that you should not bury two mesim, one next to the other. You need a kosel between them. It doesn't say in Shulchan Aruch how large that kosel has to be. In Seif Daled, they talk about burying two mason, one on top of the other. And there are two girsaos in the Ramban, in the Teres HaAdam, I believe on page 116, about whether you need three tfachim or six tfachim. It does not say, in terms of the side-by-side, how many tfachim you need. Reb Kiva Eger over here notes, in his opinion, you still need six tfachim. There's a discussion in the Badei HaShulchan, you need six tfachim in addition to the dofen, or is six tfachim only when there is no dofen? Most assume that the kavura side by side is the same as the kavura on top, and if you need six tfachim, I think you need six tfachim. I think that's the basic assumption. Again, there is a lengthy discussion about this here in the Gilyan Maharsha in all of the Svarim. There's another discussion that we do not bury a Rasha next to it. Well, let me first talk about the other thing. Burial is becoming a big issue. There is not enough space to bury, especially in Eretz Yisrael, where in Siman Shin Samach Gimel Se'if Beis, it says that you are not molech a meis me'ir le'ir unless you're going to Eretz Yisrael. And in the Pirkei Tshuva, there's a discussion, even if the meis did not give a tzivui to go to Eretz Yisrael, the children can decide to take him to Eretz Yisrael. But Moshe Feinstein paskins that Moses Montefiore should not be taken to Eretz Yisrael, because in his opinion, only the children can make that decision, not other descendants and not the government of Israel. But in many cases, the children move the body to Eretz Yisrael. Many people ask to be buried in Eretz Yisrael because as an Inyan, the Gemara in Ksuba says, if you're nikbar in Eretz Yisrael, your sins are forgiven, the chipar ad maso amo. If you're buried in Eretz Yisrael, it's like you're buried tachas ha-mizbeach. So there are traditional practices that Jews are buried in Eretz Yisrael. This means that there's not going to be enough space in Eretz Yisrael for burials. Har HaMenuchot is largely full. Har HaZesim has been full for like 100 years. If there's cemeteries in Beit Shemesh, they're also filling up. So what do? So they try to do above ground burials, meaning to say that they build a building and they put the nifter into the building. It's clear in the Gemara that you can put a nifter into the side of a mountain. In Har HaMenuchot, they do that also. Whether they could put a nifter in a building that may it in, it's okay. Rav Moshe Feinstein's opposition to mausoleums there in Chelek Gimel, Simen Kuf Mem Gimel, is because he feels, like we mentioned earlier, that in a mausoleum, the body does not disintegrate quickly enough, right? Your idea is to make the body not disintegrate. You're controlling the climate, etc. Above ground burial, when it's attached to the ground, that has it in the kavura b'karka also, and the body disintegrates, me'ikar adin, that is absolutely permitted. There's a huge literature today about how they go about kavura in Eretz Yisrael because there's not enough space. My aunt and uncle are buried in Har HaMenuchot, different aunt. My aunt and uncle are buried in Har HaMenuchot, and they're buried one on top of the other. It says in Shulchan Aruch that you do not bury two mesim next to each other unless they are people who could sleep together. A father with a young son, a mother with a young son, etc. Those dinim are in Shin Samach Beis If Gimel. And some of the sermons say the husband and the wife should not be buried together. It's considered not Derech Kavod. The Gemara in Baba Basra has a story about Rabbi Benoa that he went and he sees the Ma'aras HaMachpelah, and he sees Avram and Sarah are embracing, so he like runs away. So they say, well, maybe a husband and a wife should not be buried together in the same kever based on that story of Rabbi Benoa. Of course, there's little raya for Rabbi Benoa. In that case, they're mamash hugging each other. Avram and Sarah hugging, that's like considered not Ayrech Ara to see it. But in other situations, it might not be a problem. My aunt and uncle buried one on top of the other. I do not know how much dirt is between them or not. Technically, you could always have mason one on top of the other as long as there are 6 tefachim of dirt on top, or according to one gears in the Ramban, 3 tefachim, or according to the Pispei Chu, if you don't have enough space, anything, etc. You have to remember in Europe, often the government would allot territory for cemeteries, and sometimes you didn't have enough space, so you'd have to bury in whatever space you had, so you'd do one on top of the other, and sometimes you didn't even have enough space for the various tefachim, that we spoke about. The Gemara in Sanhedrin writes that there are different batei kvaros, one for the niskolim and nisrafin, and one for the nechnokim, etc. And what's the fourth of the, and those who die with saif, different batei kvaros. You're not allowed to bury even a rasha chamor eitzah, a rasha kal. If you know somebody did 20 aveiros and someone did 19 aveiros, you shouldn't bury them next to each other. The way Rav Schechter always says it is that the practice was that each shul has its own cemetery. The assumption is if you daven in this shul, you did that many aveiros. You did daven in that shul, you did that many aveiros. So different shuls have different cemeteries because you shouldn't bury rasha chamor eitzah, rasha kal. Certainly we don't bury Eitz Tzaddik, Eitzel Russia. We don't bury a Chassid Muflag, even Eitzel others, etc. I know when I was in there, Israel, so on the Rosh Hashiva, Rav Ruderman's yard site, we went to his kever. So he has like a fence around the kever for him and his wife. He's buried in the regular cemetery in Baltimore. The idea is that a tzaddik should not be buried Eitzel ordinary people. Rav Soloveitchik's kever in Boston has like certain shrubs around the plot for his family. Again, it's like some sort of mechitza. you see from those dinim that an above ground mechitza is sufficient when it comes to burying a tzaddik etzel rasha. That I believe is found in the Sefer Hasidim, an above ground mechitza is sufficient. The question is burying non Jews in a Jewish cemetery. Avraham Avinu goes out of his way to purchase special burial ground for Sarah. Even though the din is that we're kover meisei akum mitnei darkei shalom, but we don't bury meisei akum with meisei Yisrael. We don't bury them together. How much space do you need? So in the Gilyan Marshovi here, there's a discussion, 8 amos, 4 amos, that's by a Rosh Eitzel Tzadik, probably the same by a Goy Eitzel Yid, right? 8 amos or 4 amos. Some discuss just having a fence between them. This issue also became a big issue. Today you have Russians who are fighting, let's say, for the Israeli army. They might halachically not be Jewish. Do you bury them? Do you bury them in the Jewish cemetery? Rav Goren was the chief rabbi. He was lenient on this issue. In the biography of Rav Goren, it's an awesome biography, by the way. The biography of Rav Goren was like a fascinating man. His biography is really cool. So in the biography of Rav Goren, they write how Rav Goren tried to have leniencies in Kavura of Russia, Kavura of Goyim, etc. If the Goy dies, the Tzorech Klal Yisrael dies in the war for the Jews, his position was not accepted. La Halacha, we don't bury Goyim in the Jewish cemetery. One of the big issues that always comes up is you have an intermarried couple, etc. These are questions that Rabbanim have to deal with. Like to protect the integrity of a Jewish cemetery, it's a real big deal. We're not burying a Rosh Eitzel Tzadik. Certainly you shouldn't bury Jews next to Goyim, etc. The way they used to solve the problem of space in cemeteries is they bury people in what was called a sarcophagus, they would bury people. Then they would take the atzamos after the body rotted, and they'd put the atzamos in a sarcophagus in like a small box, and then they had less problem. They had less need for space. The bones take up less space, etc. It's considered bizarre to mix bones of different people together. You should still have like a little hefsek between the bones. But technically speaking, that's the din of pinui atzamos, that you wait until the body disintegrates and then you bury the bones. There is no iser hana'a on the grave if it's put there temporarily. So therefore, you can move the body. You can move the bones afterwards, and it takes up less space. That's the basic halacha in that case. There is a tshuva of the Radvaz that even though we do not put the bones of one mace together with the other mace, you always have a hefsek when you're going to Eretz Yisrael, because the mila of kavura be'Eretz Yisrael, we always put the Rama writes in Shin Samach Gimel, we always put offer from Eretz Yisrael in with the mace. Because of that, so when you're going to Eretz Yisrael, we allow the bones of mace A to go together with mace B, the Radvaz writes in the tshuva Adkan. So these are the dinim I wanted to speak about in Shin Samach Beis and Shin Samach Gimel. Now we have to move on to Tumas Kohanim. There is a ton of material in Tumas Kohanim. A lot of simonim and not that many simonim. Shin Samach Beis through Shin Ayin Dalet, but it's like really important la halacha. Just to give a hakdama for the dinim of Tumas Kohanim, there is a machlokas between the Rambam and the Ravid in the fifth perek of Hilchos Nezirus. The fifth perek of Hilchos Nezirus. The Rambam writes that if you have a nazir who's mitame lemeis, and toich shiva, he's metame to another mace. So the Rambam says you get malchus. Perakei of Nazirus halacha tesvav. The Ravid writes, iyanti b'shmu azu a meseches nozir, and I see that it is wrong, and therefore where the Ra'avad says that the Rambam's approach is wrong. This is an idea of Savala Tuma. You're already, the Tuma is absorbed. So therefore, the Ra'avad says that although the Rambam says that you're going to get Malkus, in his opinion, there is no Malkus. And he then concludes, Kehanim Bisman is already Tame Mace. Therefore, if you want to be Mechayiv them, that it's Asra to be Metame Olav Lahavi Raya, that's the conclusion of the Ra'avad in Perakev Naziris Halacha Yud Zayin. There are three opinions within the Ra'avad, what he holds. Some assume that according to the Ra'avad, once you're Tame, it's Heter Gomer to become Tame again. Some assume according to the Ra'avad that once you're Tame, it's Asra Midrabbanan to become Tame again. Remember, the Rambam says you get Malkus, it's Asra Minatayra. The Ra'avad says not like that. What does the Ra'avad say? Does the Ra'avad say it's Heter Gomer, once I'm Tame to become Tame again? Does the Ra'avad say it's Asra Midrabbanan? Does the Ra'avad say it's an Isra Da'irais or just there's no Malkus? In the Dagomer Revava, on the side of the Shulchan Aruch, they tell you that he changed his mind. He changed his mind on this question. And originally he felt that it's Heter Gomer. Then later on he realized that he was completely wrong on this point. And therefore the Dagomer Revava, here it's in Shin Ayin Gimel in the Dago Merivava and Sif Beis. He says, according to the Ra'avad, that there is no Malkus, Eino Mutar Tuma. Therefore, Kaihanim Bisman Hazeh, who are already Tomei, even though we don't paskin like the Ra'avad, but by a Mace Kusi, you could rely on it. We'll talk about that, that maybe Goyim are not metame but ohel. Maybe if you're already tame, zok the dog omer avava, you can be mitzdarif the ra'ifid that you're already tame. You can be metame to a mace nochri. That's what the ra'ifid, that's what the dog omer avava begins with. Omer Yechezkel, later on he writes, what I wrote in the first two se'ifim, I was following the Mishnah Lamelech, that according to him, the Ra'avad says there's no Isra at all. Aval achsha nasati al libi she'ulai lo amra ha-Ra'avad ela inyan chi of Malkus. Aval inyan Isra, ulai apil Isra toira moda, etc. Right, since the Dago Merivav, I changed my mind. So this is already a very important issue. The Rambam holds that if you're Tameh, to become Tameh again is Osir mina toira, you get Malkus. The Ra'avad holds that once you're Tame, to become Tame again, either Heter Gomer or Asur Mitrabanan or Asur Dairaisa. The Maskana of the Dagomer Vava is that it's Asur Dairaisa, just not an Isser that gives you Malkus. That's what the Maskana of the Dagomer Vava is. This issue is, of course, very relevant. One of the big Shilas that came up years ago is they found out that all the flights that go to Eretz Yisrael fly over cemeteries. There's like a cemetery in Chulon. So Reb Fiva Cohen sent the Shaila to Reb Oyoshev about maybe there are heterim. Maybe there are heterim in terms of the dinim of Ohel Zorok. Perhaps we'll talk about this. Maybe there are heterim because Kehanim Bizman Hazar are assumed to be Tameh because there are dead bodies all over the place. And maybe we could rely on this Ra'avad that once you're Tame, you're allowed to come Tame again, even though Dago Merivava doesn't like it, many Achrim do like it. That was like one of the svaras that Reb Fivel had when he wrote the letter to Reb Yoshev. Reb Fivel, though, backs out somewhat, or in his opinion, he says, maybe we don't have the assumption that Bizman Hazeh, all of our Kohanim are Tame. That assumption used to be that people lived at home and people died at home. So inevitably, you're in contact with dead bodies. But today, people die in hospitals. Many people have never become Tamei. So you can't assume that every Kayin is automatically Tamei Mace. In Yeshurun Volume 10, where they have Revival's questions, Rebbe Yoshev's response, Rebbe Yoshev is not Misyaches to that issue at all. So we don't know what he held about that question. But b'kitzur ma'aseh, there's a machlokes Rambam and Ravid. If I'm tamei, can I become tamei again? And potentially there are huge nafgaminos that potentially it could be heter gomor for koyin bizman hazeh to metame to nachrim like the Dogomer Vava entertained originally. Rav Schechter in his Sefer Be'ikvei Hatzon in Simen Lamed Hey, Rav Schechter says that the Rambam and the Ravid are disagreeing here on the fundamental level. You see, what's the nature of the Isser of Tumas Kohanim? Is the din of Tumas Kohanim that I'm not allowed to become Tomei? Or is the din of Tumas Kohanim that I should not be in the area connected next to, near a mace? That's the question. The Rambam says that even though I'm already Tomei, I am not allowed to become Tomei again. I get Malkus. What's the cheshbon of that Rambam? The cheshbon of that Rambam is that the Isser Tuma is an Isser to become close. Right? When the Torah in last week's parasha, Parsha's Amor, says, "Anefshal Yitama Ba'amov," according to the Rambam, what that means is that even though I'm already Tomei, don't come close to a mace. "Nefesh lo Yitama Ba'amov," meaning don't have kreva to a mace. The Ravid, however, says, no, if you're Tomei, maybe you're allowed to become Tomei again. Because according to the Ravid, the nature of the Isser Tuma is the din of, the nature of the Isser Tuma is Tuma. Tuma of Kohanim means don't become Tomei. If I'm already Tomei and I'm not Mosif any Tuma, so perhaps according to the Ravid, it's Heter Gomor. So if Shechter is saying that there's a fundamental Machlokes Rambam in Ravid, about whether Tumas Kohanim is based on the din of Kreva Lemeis, or is Tumas Kohanim based on the dinim of Tuma? And that's Machlokas Rambam and Ravid. For the Ravid, it's based on Tuma, etc. Rav Schechter builds on this a lot. In the beginning of Simen Shin Ayin Aleph, we see that a Kayim can't go into an oil mace. The Shach there, Seif Katan Aleph, quotes from the Sefer Rokeach, that if you have the wife of a Kohen and she's pregnant, so she's allowed to go into the Oha HaMeis because it's a Svek Sveka. Maybe the baby's going to be a Nefel, maybe the baby is going to be female, and the female Kohenet is allowed to become Tamei, right? And Marla Kohenim B'nei Aharon, B'nei Aharon, B'nosa Aharon, Rashi quotes it being a Parshas Amar. So the Svek Sveka, says the Shach. The reason why you could go in is because maybe it's a Nefel, maybe it is a, maybe it's, what's it called? Maybe it's not a Nefel, but maybe the baby's going to be a girl. Based on this, I know that my old Chavrusa, Rabbi Tanchum Cohen, married her Shechter's daughter. And when she was pregnant, and you have a sonogram, and you know the baby is male, so you don't have the Sveksek anymore, no? The whole cheshbin of the Shach is that you have a Svek Sveka. Maybe it's female, maybe it's a Nefel. If you know that the baby is male, so then you don't have the Svek Sveka anymore. Now, the Magen Avraham doesn't like this Shach. He says, why do you need the din of Svek Sveka? There's a halacha, the Tahara Balua is not Matami. The baby is Balua inside the mother. It's completely surrounded. So why would there be a halacha that you need Svek Sveka? You can't become Tamei anyway. Zakhtar Shechter, no. Maybe the idea over here is not because of Tuma. You're right, Tahara Balua does not become Tamei. But maybe it's still considered Kreva LaMace. You're still close to, in proximity of a mace, and maybe that's why there's a problem. Similarly, Rav Schechter points out that there's a suffix in the Minchas Chinuch. You know, we paskin that suffix tuma in Rishus HaYachid Sveiko Tamei, suffix tuma in Rishus HaRabim Sveiko Tahar. Does that apply to dinam of Tumas Kohanim? Zakhtar Rav Schechter, that suffix relates to this Chakira, which we're saying is a Machlokas Rambam and Ravid. if the din in tumas kohanim is a din in tumah, so I should apply the rules of suffik tumah b'rishus hayavid, suffik tumah b'rishus harabim. But if it's not a halacha in tumah and tahara, it's a halacha in isur v'heter. So in that situation, by isur v'heter, right, I say suffik d'oraisa l'hachmir, suffik d'rabbanan l'hakel. So the suffik elim in chaskinuch, where Rav Shechter sets it up, is dependent on this machlokas Rambam and Ravid. There's a machlokas in Shulchan Aruch about whether in Shin Ayin, machlokas in Simon Shin Ayin, whether you are allowed, whether a Kohen can go into a home that has a goses. The Mechaber says it's usher for a Kohen to go into a home with a goses. The Ramah quotes Yesh Matirin Tov LaHachmir. Right, we already discussed what the Hagdar of a Goses is. Why is it the Mechaber holds that you can't go into the house where there's a Goses? Well, Maisa, there's no Tumah. The answer might be it's considered Kravel Ames. Kravel Ames in the sense of because this Goses is Karov Leos Mace, so therefore there's Kravel Ames in that situation. That's the way Rav Shechter sets it up again in that Sefer Be'ikvei Hatzon. There's another din that we spoke about beforehand today, which is the dinim of Efer Hasrufin. The Pesachei Tshuva in Shin Samach Tes quotes a discussion about whether the Efer of a mace is going to be Tame. Shin Samach Tes Se'if Katin Beis. Now, we paskin, or whether a kohen can become in contact with Efer HaMeis. The Efer is not metame. You need at least kizayis to be tame, or etzem kisa'ira. You need the bone that's the size of a barley. But Efer, there should be no tuma. Nonetheless, it could be that the Iser is one of Kreva LaMeis, and the Efer is considered close enough to a mace that would be problematic. Maybe the idea is that the Isser Kohen is lehis karev lemace, and therefore the Efer is considered karev lemace. It could be that even those who are makel on the Efer, they might also that the nature of the Isser is karev lemace, but Efer hasrufim might not be considered karev lemace. I'm just presenting this piece in Simen Lamed Hey of Be'ikvei Hatzayin because I think it's a very nice hakdama to the Din of Tumas Kohanim that we'll be learning over the next couple of days. Okay, gentlemen, if you can make it to the Yeshiva's Day of Learning, strongly encouraged. I'm going to be there, Mirz Hashem. Hope everyone has a great day. Thank you for coming to learn.
Maybe it's a good question.
Yes.
So cremation ashes don't have tumah?
The pashtus is that even if Efer Hasrufim have, Efer Hasrufim does not have tumah. Cremation ashes for sure don't have tumah because there's mamish less there than, But it still might be usher for a kohen to come in contact with it, even though it's not tumah. That's why Rav Shechter sets it up in that essay. Yeah. Rav Shechter gave this piece at the opening of the Katz Kollel. The Katz Kollel was dedicated by Marcus Katz, no? And when Shechter gave the piece, he asked, how did Marcus Katz get here? He's a Kayan. He's flying from Mexico to New York. Isn't he flying over cemeteries? Right, this is a Meiser of Shechter. So Shechter argues that if the nature of the Isser of Tumas Kohanim is Krav Alameis, when you're in an airplane, one could argue, especially if you're above the cloud level, that you're not karov to the mace at all. So therefore, if the nature is tumah, we can discuss that the tumah goes all the way up, right, etc. If it's tumah ritzutza, the tumah squashed, it's bokeya ba'ola ad larakia, right? But if the din is krav lemeis, one can make a strong case that's not considered krav lemeis. We'll talk about some of these issues again as we go on. This is just bigadol, the way to approach the dinim of Tumas Kehanim. Okay, gentlemen, have a marvelous day. Hope to see you guys later. Kol tov.